This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, Grieferinos. I'll never call you that again. I'm so sorry. It's your boy, Michael Cruz-Kane. We're back with another episode of A Good Cry. I hope you can't hear the heat in my home. It is incredibly loud to me in the background, and there's nothing I can do to stop it. Kind of like grief? Question mark. Let's not reach for the analogies, Michael. Okay, grief thoughts for today. I want to talk about something that I talked about on this episode of the podcast with my friend Jake Cornell. It's something I've thought about for a while, but Jake really crystallized it for me in a way that got me spiraling into thinking about this so much. And that is what I guess I would call the idea of object permanence. We spend all this time from like when you're an infant, understanding that if your mom and dad put their hands over their face, that they're not gone, right? Or if they go behind a tree for a second, that they haven't disappeared, that they're just behind that tree for a second, but they still exist. Well, wherever you are right now, listening to this, right? You're probably alone, and your parents or your friends or your acquaintances or your coworkers, none of them are where you are at this moment. Maybe you can't see them, right? But they still exist, and they're memories, your relationships to them, all of that stuff still informs the way you act right now, even though they're not there with you, even though they're one room over. That's true for the living, for sure, right? Okay, well, is it true for the dead? They're not in the room with you. Maybe they're not one room over. Maybe they're two rooms over. But we have this object permanence that keeps us thinking, maybe their hand is just over their face. Maybe they're just behind a tree for a second. I can't stop thinking about this. I mean, I'm thinking about it all the time now. And talk about a good cry. After this episode with Jake, I sat on the stairs of my home and wept in a way that was good. You know, a regular good one. To talk about this episode, I mean, I really loved it so much. I hope it is as meaningful to you as it was to me. I know Jake from the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, rest in peace, in New York City. We sort of moved in concentric circles there. He's a stand-up now. He hosts a podcast. He's a very funny, charming, dare I say, handsome man with a beautiful speaking voice. And we talked about the loss of his friend, Stacy. And that's something also new for the podcast. We haven't talked about the death of a friend on the pod yet. And it's just fascinating. And there's a lot of things in this episode that we haven't touched on before, including the guilt that you might feel if you don't feel like the grief is yours to feel, because it's not your wife or your mom or your sister. It's somebody else's daughter, somebody else's sister. I love this conversation with Jake. I hope you love it too. This is another episode of A Good Cry with Jake Cornell. Thanks for listening. Hope it helps. Well, this is the podcast now, Jake. Here you are. Here you are on the podcast. thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
How are you doing today? Are you doing, you know, all right? Good? Medium? Bad?
I'm pretty good. Yeah, I can't complain. You know, pretty solid day over here.
Okay, right on. We're going to jump right into the first question of the pod, Jake.
Yeah.
Which is, what is your relationship to grief? How would you describe it?
I'm laughing because when I found out that I was doing this show, I was like, I had subscribed to the podcast already, but hadn't listened yet. And I was like, okay, I need to listen now that I'm going to be on it. And when I started listening, I was like, oh, I really hope this doesn't open with like a vague, broad question about how I relate to grief. And then immediately, what is your, and I was like, motherfucker.
Boom. Yeah, we try and start with something really uncomfortable.
No, it's perfect. I had plenty of time to think. I would say, and it's a fantastic question. I'm not trying to critique you at all.
Okay, well, the credit for that question goes to my producer, Sabrina.
Sabrina, you did a great job. It's a good question.
Yeah, your friend.
And my dear friend. And my answer to it would be my relationship to grief is complicated and fraught with imposter syndrome is the most concise answer I came up with.
That's not an answer that I've ever heard, or at least I haven't heard on this podcast or in life.
Okay.
What do you mean by imposter syndrome? Why imposter?
Every time I grew up in a house where there was a lot of, oftentimes like we would cite that kind of old, like if we were upset about something, if someone in my house was upset, oftentimes it was cited like there's kids starving in Africa. Like you shouldn't be upset about that. You know what I mean? So it's like, I was kind of like,
sure.
And that is a problematic statement. I know, but that is what was said at times. And I think it's like, you know,
I'm familiar. I grew up with that too.
And I think it's like, I always kind of, I have a fault. Oftentimes I will cite someone having it worse than me as a reason to not like feel sorry for myself or not feel bad, you know? And so anytime there's been a big loss in my life, there's always someone who like I think had it worse or was closer to the person. And I don't want to like, and I weirdly feel sometimes like I don't want to take away from their grief or diminish their grief by focusing too much on my own, which is not productive and I'm working against. So I guess that, you know, that's where I've landed.
Okay. So just to unpack that more, we should talk about the origin specifically of your grief. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. I mean, the person I plan to talk about today was my dear friend, Stacy, who died 2 years ago. And I think with Stacy, I was I knew Stacy through a community, like a theater we were all involved at, UCB, as you know, as you were a part of.
Sure.
Everyone loved her and everyone was really close to her. And I sort of ended up being in a position where I was one of the people that was like, she died of a brain tumor. And it was like a year-long process between finding out she had it and her dying. And there was sort of this group of people who ended up being the ones that like were her, almost like the liaisons between like her and like this community of people who like cared about her and wanted to know what was going on. And I was very focused on at the time of like taking care of her and making sure like things were going well in terms of that like communication. And so but it also felt like there was like kind of a spotlight on this group of people that was like around her helping her. And I was like, I very much didn't want to come across as someone who was like wanting to be near grief for the attention or something like that. I'm having a hard time articulating it because quite frankly, like, you know, Stacy passed and then the pandemic started 2 weeks later. So it was like I'm still in the process of kind of unpacking certain aspects of it. But I think I just always wanted to focus on her and taking care of her and making sure that she was okay. And then making sure that the people around her who were suffering were okay. And I didn't want to focus on myself because I was like, anything that I'm dealing with, Stacy has it so much worse because she's so sick. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, a lot, so much of that makes sense. I think one aspect of it is that sense that like, this is really, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like this isn't really my grief. It's really like somebody else's grief. So who am I to feel this grief that really belongs to them?
Exactly. And that's kind of, I think the reason I answered the question that way is because like the other, I would say like I've lost different people in my life, but the other like big death that happened in my life was when I was young, my stepmother, lost a baby during childbirth, like, or like moments before. She essentially like a full term stillbirth. And like, it was this huge thing in my family and it was incredibly sad and very sorrowful. But it was a thing, like I never met this baby. It wasn't I never met them. They were dead when I met, you know, mm-hmm. but everyone was devastated. And I was like 13 and I didn't know how to place that grief either because I wasn't mourning someone I had lost, but I was in the proximity of someone who had lost someone mm-hmm. in my family. So I feel like that's why I said the imposter syndrome thing, because so much of the death that's happened in my life, it's like, I've been like this, it's this person's problem, problem to deal with, and I don't want to make it about me.
Yeah.
I guess I ultimately was there for all of it, so I guess it was happening to me too.
Yeah, I mean, that part of it, I have heard that before from people talking about death, to be like, even guests on this podcast afterwards have been like, hey, can you take, you know, a piece of it out here or there, because I don't want the story when I talk about it for people to think that I'm trying to make it about me. And so we always do that.
Yeah.
But I also think, like, it is about you. Like, I mean, it's not, you're not the main character of that other person's story, but you feel whatever feelings you have, and they're not illegitimate because you weren't at the epicenter, because you were 2 feet away from where the bomb landed. It doesn't mean that, like, the person who's 1 foot away is the only person who gets to be sad.
No, 100%. And you can tie anything back to capitalism, but I do think it's a capitalist thing of, like, viewing grief as a finite resource and be like, who gets how much of it? Where it's like, the joy of grief is that it can be infinite and we can all have it, you know, like
the joy of it.
And so it's like, I've been thinking about that a lot recently, about like, oh, I guess I can hold space for all of that. And also, like, kind of deal with the fact that I did experience trauma and loss and, you know, try to address that.
Yeah, I think there's that element of grief being finite and also of it being competitive, where it's like,
yeah, okay,
who has the most? Okay, well, then that's the only person. I do feel, you know, obviously the logical conclusion to that is the only person who's allowed to feel sad is the most sad person. And everyone else should be like, well, at least we're not Ted. I mean, Ted's really got it fucked up, so.
Totally, because I think it's also we're trained to, like, we're not trained to sit with someone in their sadness. We're trained to make them feel better. So it's like,
yes.
And so when you're, I think that's when that hierarchy comes into play, where it's like, okay, if Michael's more sad than me, then because he's more sad than me, it's my job to put my sadness away and make Michael feel better. Whereas, like, we could just, Michael and Jake could sit down and, which is truly what's happening on this podcast, but, like, we could just, like, sit down and be sad together and talk about why we're sad. And that's not what we're trained to do. It's like one person's supposed to fix the other. So then this hierarchy falls into place where you're trying to suss out who's the most in need of getting made to feel better. And then we'll work backwards from there.
Yeah. And I think that there are degrees, right? Like, there is, like, a triaging of grief where, like,
yes,
you know, if your friend's mom dies, then I do think it's like, even though you might be sad about it, it's like, let me check in. Let me see what I can do for my friend first. Not necessarily, not like fix it necessarily.
Yeah.
But like, what would be a benefit to them? And then I can process my thing as well. But I think there are a lot of other things where the, like, you know, if your best friend dies, that's also someone else's sister maybe, or somebody's daughter.
Yes, exactly.
And you're all going to have, like, very different kinds of grief. It's not linear. It's not like, yes, you know, I have 5 grief, but she has 7. It's like, it's more like, I was weirdly talking about this with my wife last night. It's more like, I have a pain in my arm and you have a pain in your knee. And those are just, they're different pains, but we can still agree that we feel this. You know, we both feel pain.
Yeah. And also, once you kind of get to the place of realizing it's not about fixing it, it's not about, like, heal, or, like, I guess it is about healing, but it's not about, like, fixing the problem, because that's what grief innately is, like, the sadness surrounding something that is permanent and unfixable, right? You know?
Yeah.
And so it's not about solving the problem. When you learn, when you kind of accept that, I think it's easier to sit with each other in that and be like, my arm hurts, your knee hurts, let's talk about it.
Yeah. And I also think that the impulse to, I'm just making up analogies on the spot now, Jake, so these could really not work.
No, please.
But the impulse to fix the thing is like, so, like, the, you know, the person who you're coming to help is, like, leaking out all of this, like, sadness and anger and whatever it is. And there's an impulse to be like, oh, let me plug all those things up. And it's like, well, actually, I need this to get out. Like, this has to come out.
Exactly.
So your efforts to fix it aren't really, they're actually, all you're doing is, what you're doing, even though it's well-intentioned, is postponing the leakage, which will happen at some other time.
Yeah, at some point it's going to come out, so you might as well just sit in it and talk through it for a second or several.
When Stacy died, because you're not immediate family, like, you know, blood family of hers, did people try to comfort you and, like, make you feel better about it? Or were you thought of in that process at all?
Well, like, what happened was so she found out there was, like, kind of stages of it, you know, and then it got to a place where I remember, I think I got a phone call from someone basically saying that, like, the doctors had been like, it's time to come say goodbye. And I had it, the way it had kind of sussed out among everyone, I then had to call like a lot of people. I basically had to figure out like who wants to say goodbye and like call and like schedule everyone to like go say goodbye to this person who was dying. And I remember a lot of people kind of being like, are you taking care of yourself? Like anyone I called kind of like when we were at the hospital after all of that kind of being, I think seeing that I had been doing like a lot of admin.
Right.
And they were like, are you good? And I liked having something to do and I liked having work to do around it. And I liked having responsibilities because it was structure, I guess. And it made me feel like I was helping, even though no one was helping. She was dying, you know, like there was, that's, but I guess.
Right.
Whatever. And so I remember a lot of people being like, are you okay? Because you're doing a lot of work right now. And I was saying the same thing to other people who were doing other things, you know? And there was like a small, there was kind of like a group around us who were very near her through a lot of it. And I think we were kind of checking in with each other. But like I said, when she actually died, I was out of the country on a trip and got like the call, the email. And I think at that point we had all kind of known it was coming. And like, it was, it had been like over a year at that point that it was kind of like, it was devastating. Absolutely. But it was also kind of like, we had known it was coming for like 8 months. So there wasn't this like massive influx of like reaching out to each other as much as I think it was more at that point. It was kind of like really just wanting to celebrate her because this horrible thing had finally ended. And then, like I said, I'm not joking, like 2 weeks later, it was like, you can't leave your house. There's a like lockdown. And so then it was like,
right.
Okay, I guess I'll put this in a box and process it in 2 years when the world is open again.
Right. When I'm able to have like some kind of community again, then I will talk to those people about this.
Exactly. And we did actually have a memorial thing for her back in May. So like almost a year and a half after she had passed.
And what was that like? Like, was it over Zoom or did you all go to like where?
No, we did it in Fort Greene Park on her birthday. And it was just like a lot of us coming together to kind of like, I think there's a lot of us were craving that moment because her funeral had happened on the West Coast right before the pandemic. And like none of us really had a chance to like organize anything. And so it was kind of like, I think everyone coming together to just kind of like be in a group of people and like touching people to be like, this happened and like, we're okay. And we miss her and we love her.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was funny because it was also just like the first time we were all seeing each other after the pandemic. Like no one had really hung out yet because it was like early days. So it was like, everyone was like kind of like reconnecting and hi. And then my friend Brandon was like, okay, we have to acknowledge that this is a funeral. Like, we have to, like, no one was acknowledging that this was, that we were there for, like, a very sad, like, sort of thing. But also, we had been processing for a year and a half. So I would say overall, it was, like, really nice. But also, there was an innate strangeness to it, for sure, just because of, you know, the circumstances and everything. But I'm glad, I'm very thankful we had it.
I feel like those things logically don't serve a purpose exactly, but emotionally, exactly as you said, the ritual gives you a space to be like, okay, something has happened.
Yeah.
And Brandon being like, something irrefutable and true that has happened that led us all here, which is that our friend has died. And there's something, you know, awesome and beautiful about the, you know, one of the first times you hang out in a group when the whole world is on fire is because of your friend. Like it's your friend who's brought you all together there. Or her death, you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think it was like, if anything, it really did highlight the need of the ritual of like a funeral or a memorial. Like it was like, oh yeah, there is something like deeply human about needing like people to come together and acknowledge it and whatever you want to call it, celebrate their life, mourn their death. Like there is something, at least for me, I was like, I did need that. I needed like a group of people to come together and sort of like hold hands and be like, we're here, this happened. And it was very eye-opening to how necessary that is.
And was that organized in any, like, did people give speeches? Or I've heard of, like, you know, people doing comedy shows at the death of a comedian, or?
It was sort of like, Stacey was, like, she loved, like, abstract, weird fucking theater and she loved like being on a stage. I mean, there's no one who loved attention more than Stacey. No one loved attention more than Stacey. She.
Wow, that's a bold statement for someone who knows a lot of comedians.
Like, truly. But like, Stacey tried to initiate a group game in an improv show where the premise was she stands alone on stage for 5 minutes. That was like a premise she tried to pitch once. she loved attention and love doing weird stuff. We did this, like, we were, a lot of us who were close with her had done this like experimental theater show with her for like a year where that was like not even comedic and was just like a lot of weird emotional people crawling around making sounds shit.
Oh, I love it.
So yeah. So a lot of like, I think the funeral was kind of like, we did like, we all stood in a circle. Like the moment when we decided to like acknowledge like this is a funeral or this is a memorial, I guess I should say. Like, we all stood in a circle and, like, held hands and kind of, like, did a breathing exercise, I think. And then, I was like, yep, okay. I think that was just weird enough for Stacey. And now we can, like, carry on.
It's great. I mean, I love, the weirdness of those. I don't think of that as a common ritual, people holding hands and doing a breathing exercise at someone's funeral. But anything like that, anything to just be like, okay, this is a moment to take a break and be real with each other.
Yes.
That something has happened is, I think, good. Even though I could see someone being like, who needs this? What's like, she's already dead, but it's not for her. It's for us.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that is part of it. And I think maybe some people don't need that, but I think for other people, it's like, I think it's healthy. I think grief can feel very internal. I mean, it is very internal, but it can also feel very isolating, you know, because it's like, it's kind of almost going back to the hierarchy thing. It's like, no one's in as much pain as me, or I'm not as much pain as everyone else, or I don't, you know, you can kind of like compare. And I think it's nice to have everyone kind of come together and be like, regardless of what everyone's proximity was to this, and like, regardless of how you knew who or what your relationship was to them, like, we all lost something, we all experienced something, and that's, and everyone's experience of that is like valid, you know?
Yeah. Were you in close contact with her family during this time?
Yeah, her mom had come here to take care of her for like a good part of it. So we were in, I was talking with her mom fairly regularly and like seeing her mom whenever we visited her, because she needed like full-time care for most of the time that she was sick.
And she was in the hospital, I assume, not a home, right?
No, she was at home for a lot of it until right towards the end.
Okay.
Yeah. But like she lost, I mean, it was just, the whole thing was like incredibly insane. Like it was, I mean, it was truly the like TV movie version of like, I have a headache, I go to the hospital, there's a mass, like sudden, like it just happened so fast. And then like within 2 weeks, she couldn't walk. Like it was a very sudden like decline. And she was in she was like in and out of the hospital, but she was at home being cared for by her mother for a lot of it. So we saw her mom a lot.
That thing you said about TV movie feels so true to me also. I remember when my son died, I guess it's because I think of death and like real tragedy as being so far from me until it happens. Like it's something happens and someone else, it happens to somebody else, happens in the movie.
100%.
And I remember like writing in the blog or whatever that I was keeping at the time that it, like his funeral felt like a page from the script of the movie about somebody else's life where you're like, I can't believe this is real. For you, for your first association to be like, this is a TV movie, to me, it speaks to that sense that at least in the West, like you just don't think of death as a thing that's real. It's not regular.
Well, totally. And did you do the thing like, when it was happening and like in the really bad moments, kind of like starting to picture it as though you were someone else watching your own life?
I don't know that I did that more than I normally do. It's hard to know. But I mean, the surreality of like, maybe not like somebody else watching my life, but like me watching my life, meaning like,
yeah,
I'm watching this, some guy is up in front of all these people saying, thank you for coming to this funeral. And I guess that's me, which is weird because I'm here, but he's there doing that.
Yeah.
I think there are like moments, I don't mean that I was like totally disassociated. I just mean that there are moments where my brain would be like, I don't think so. I don't think this is happening right now.
Yeah.
And it takes no matter how deep the wound is, it takes a while. It took a while for me to like fully be like, okay, so this is happening completely.
Yeah.
This is not going to unhappen.
That's, I think, the thing. That's like the thing that kind of, I think, would happen I'm very good at like kind of, I'm not a particularly emotional person. At least I don't think I like express emotion that much. I'm very like, I'm very loud and I'm very like expressive kind of like for comedic sake, but like, I don't get like angry or upset in like big, like kind of intense ways. And I do kind of, I'm the sort of person who tends to like, bottle up emotion for the sake of practicality. I think, you know, working in restaurants for 10 years will do that. But it's kind of like, I go into server mode in a crisis or in like a devastating moment where I'm kind of like, these emotions like don't serve me to like get shit done, to have to make all the phone calls to tell everyone to go, like all these things like in any moment. And I kind of like, but it's a little bit of like a chick, it's a little bit of like a snake eating its tail, where it's like, I can't process my emotions because I want to focus on like getting shit done, but I'm also seeking shit out to get done so that I don't have to process my emotions.
Yeah, right.
And then that what that results in is like so much of the grief I experience, experience of grief with losing Stacey, and like also just the process of like Stacey, because that's, now I'm getting ahead of myself and there's too many things I want to talk about, but it's like with...
Do it them all.
Okay, well, I think part of it with Stacey is, and two things. There's like, Stacey died, and that it was awful and is awful, and I miss her and I wish she was here and I wish she had so much more life, like could, she had so much more to do and I wish she was here and I could see it and be with her for it. There's like the trauma and the grief of that. She also died in a terrible way, like slowly and awfully over 14 months in a way that like I was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. And it's like the trauma of that also, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's almost grieving two separate things. Like when I think about Stacey, I think about like losing her. And then I also think about this horrible thing she went through that we all were there with her for. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It makes so much sense.
And so that's also part of like, it's like parsing those two things out and almost having to process them separately, but they're so interconnected. And I think that was what I was trying to avoid by staying busy and doing shit. And then the way I've, so much of the grief I've experienced is like these explosive moments of like a bubble I didn't know was inside of me pops. And like all of a sudden, like I can't, I'm like crying or like can't speak. I'm so emotional for like 45 seconds to a minute of just like my whole body shuts down with emotion. And then it's like gone. And I'm like, okay, so there's something going on in there.
The idea of just finishing profound, totally uncontrollable crying session, stopping, wiping your eyes and being like, okay, so I think I might be sad about something.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's pretty much that. But it's like, yeah, like, I don't know. I was at a bar the other night and like her, one of her favorite songs came on and I like was like, oh, I like this song. Where do I know this song? Oh my God. Like, you know, and it just like hit.
Yeah.
Or like I searched something in my email the other day and an old email from her came up in the search, like not, and I wasn't looking for it. Like it just happened that like one of the keywords I was searching was something she had put in the subject line of an email to me and I didn't expect it. And so it's like these, but I can't like, I'm still figuring out how to access it intentionally and then work through it intentionally. This podcast is very helpful. I'll give you a copay after.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, we don't take insurance, unfortunately. Yeah, that sense of like sudden explosive sadness is very familiar to me. And also I think to the people who listen to this podcast and the guests on it, that's very,
yeah,
that's a very par for the course, especially if you haven't had a way for yourself to like try to, as you say, intentionally like sift through all those feelings.
Yeah.
Because the grief is in there. And like the thing I was saying before about, I'll just try and plug it up. Well, you really, you can't. It's gonna happen. You can postpone it, but you can't stop it.
Yeah. And I think there's also like, I was talking with one of my friends who was also very close with Stacey, like about the processing of it. And I feel like that one of like the traps I think you can get caught in is sort of the thought of like, it's like, and I wonder, like, I'm sure you can kind of, I'm sure like you would maybe feel this way about your son where it's like, what happened is like so unjust and unfair and wrong that it's like contextualizing it in any way in your mind to make it okay and lived with feels disrespectful to the person who died.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really thought about it in that exact way. To me, it's like,
oh, I just framed a new way for you to be traumatized by your child's death. Incredible. You just M McCall.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I'll pay you the copay. No, for me, it's more like, it's like the, I mean, maybe it's different because he's a child, although you lost your friend who was very young. So it's not totally, totally dissimilar.
Yeah.
But it like untethers you from your sense of what reality was. It's like, oh, I thought the world, you know, I'm not like religious or anything. And like, you know, I don't have any of these like the good always wins or whatever, like none of those specific beliefs. But I did have some like base understanding, I thought, of like what the rules of the game were.
Totally.
One of the rules is, well, your kid doesn't die. Like whatever, maybe he'll fall down the stairs or break his leg, but he's not gonna die. And I'd even like, I've volunteered in camps for terminally ill children. Like I know intellectually that children die, but it was just like, that's not part. Yeah, I know that happens, but it doesn't happen to me. Here's the thing that I.
No, I mean, I do think in order for us to like move through society, I think our brains must just do that, right? Is like, there are these things that we know empirically happen. Like for a fact, we know that they happen, but our brains tell us like, they'll never happen in your life. Because like, if we constantly lived with that fear, we wouldn't do anything. And like, obviously infinitely lower stakes. But like when I was a little kid, I think my parents getting divorced was a version of that. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think that's also part of why it was, those things are traumatic, is because your brain tells you, not you, you're safe. And then it's like, gotcha.
Surprise.
It is you. And it's like, you know, and I think it's like if people have kids every day and I don't think they would if it was like constantly real, very real to them that they could die. You know, it's like you have to suspend the thought that it could happen to do it a little bit. And, you know, and then when it does, it's like your brain's like, wait, we really had sort of like locked it down that this was not on the table.
Yeah. I believe when I purchased this product, I was told specifically that this would not happen.
And then the world's like, so there is actually like a lot of fine print you didn't read.
Yeah. Have you looked at the back page at the bottom?
Yeah.
I thought there was no writing there. No, there is. Look at the bottom.
No, there is. Yeah.
That, I mean, I'm very familiar with that sense of feeling like, well, it's also because people are, they hide that part. They hide like, you know, either deliberately because they're like ashamed of it or because they feel like society won't accept them. But so when it happens to you, you're also like, I don't want to speak for you, but for me, we're the only people this has ever happened to. It's never happened to anybody else. So that's another untethering. It's not just like from the sense of reality. It's also like, no one in the world knows what I'm like. I am the only one. My wife and I are the only people who this has ever happened to, until slowly you reintegrate and realize, especially now that I'm talking about it more. I mean, I've had thousands of people tell me, oh, also my son died.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's all over the place.
Yeah. It's like, it's interesting. Like whenever I've had a traumatic thing like that happen, I'm always completely shocked and like smacked in the face by the way that like the world is still moving at the same pace outside of it, you know, like,
totally.
And especially living in New York, like every single time I left the hospital and went outside and it was like, they were selling churros and there was a car and someone's screaming. I was like, how does everyone not know? It's actually like almost the opposite of what you said for me, where I was like, how is this not happening to everyone? How does like,
oh, interesting.
I'm like, how does everyone not aware of this? Like this thing is so horrible. And it's like, it's an incredibly self-centered way of experiencing the world, but it's just like you go outside and you're like, oh wait, none of you fucking know and none of you fucking care. And that's okay. You shouldn't. You don't know this person. You're not part of it. But like, how is the world still moving at this pace? It was so crazy to me every time.
Jake, we've talked about that on the podcast before because that's very relatable. That feeling of like the selling of churros. I mean, what I talk about is McDonald's, like still selling cheeseburgers. Like someone can still go in and get a Big Mac. Whatever the day is the worst thing that happened to you, McDonald's is selling Big Macs on that day without it. They don't care at all.
I tried to write an essay once about like when the stillbirth I mentioned happened. I remember thinking about like everything in my house was so sad and it was so bad. And I remember thinking about how I kept on having to pee. And I was like, I still have to pee? Like, my body's still working? Like, and I tried to, like, in my, like, 15-year-old brain, I tried to write this, like, essay about the fact that, like, your body still is operating, like, autonomic functions, even though, like, everything in the world has stopped and changed. And it crashed and burned. I did not have the skills to write the essay at the time. I remember I had someone read it, and they were like, I know this is about your, like, brother dying. It makes no sense. Like, it makes no sense at all. And I was like, okay, cool. And I didn't even try to write a second draft. I was like, I'm going to delete this and move on. But it's that same thing of, like, sorry, is time still moving? Like, I don't get it, you know?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Okay, I wanted to talk about something that you brought up is – how the length of time between when you found out Stacey was sick,
yeah,
to when she died,
yeah,
and that like it is very different, I think, to lose someone sort of suddenly, right? Where it's like,
yeah,
everything was going along fine, then boom, they had a heart attack, and now they're gone. And there's different regrets tied up in that of like, oh, I didn't have a chance to say goodbye to that person, or, you know, everything happened so suddenly, I wasn't in any way prepared. But also there's a, as you touched on, there's tremendous difficulty in a long goodbye of like, now we know you're sick. Maybe a couple of months after that, we know you're not ever going to not be sick.
Yeah.
And now we just sit here and watch as this happens.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that was definitely the worst part. Like, it was no, like, especially in a situation where it's like, you can look at the prognosis of like what's going to happen before, like in terms of like function and symptoms and suffering, and, you know, get to a place where you're like, I want my friend to die. I don't want them to experience that. I hope something happens where they die before that, you know, like, and
yeah,
the guilt of like being with someone you love and feeling that is really intense, like really, really intense. And forgiving yourself for thinking that, you know, like, I don't know, it feels hard. And I think it's different for different people that go through it. I know for like us, Stacey never framed it as I'm going to die. She never framed it as I have a terminal diagnosis. Until the end, she was like, I can't wait to get back on Herald Night. I can't wait to get back performing. I'm just going to keep fighting. I'm just going to keep fighting. She never once, to me, really, except for sort of this one moment, that was sort of like a moment where she kind of like said a lot by not saying some things, and we just sort of had like a silent moment, but like she never like said the words like, I know I'm going to die. Like, I never got that. We never had that with her. And so I think that was also hard, was like trying to bolster her and be there for her, but also knowing, like, short of like a literal fantasy novel of a miracle, like, we're gonna, it's gonna, that, I don't know what we're fighting for. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think for other people, if you have had and for other people, maybe that it was a different situation. The person was like, I am gonna die, and I don't know what that's like, you know? And I think it's probably different for everyone, but I think that was what was hard. And there are, I mean, I have plenty of memories from that year and a few months that I'll cherish forever, that I'm so glad I had with her, that were like beautiful, wonderful days. And so I wouldn't trade those, but also like the suffering was awful, you know? Sickness is awful. And it makes you, you know, to tie back to what I talked about at the beginning about like being kind of disciplined in a way where it's like, don't be upset about this. It could be so much worse. Like, now I have that in a big way where I'm like, I'm like, I didn't get a call back for this. I'm like, okay, well, I can still walk and feed myself and breathe. You know, and it's like, it really changes everything in a way. But yeah, it was definitely a hard time. And that, I think, was the time where me and my friends were really leaning on each other to be like, are you okay? I know, like, and I think that was such a gift that we were all giving each other. And like, I think my partner was really great about this, like sort of having these moments where someone would kind of grab you and be like, hey, I just want to say that this is fucking awful. And you're allowed to acknowledge that and like do what you got to do right now, you know, like. And that, like, and that manifested in different ways. You know, sometimes it was like holding someone and crying. I remember like one night me and my friend Jessica and I like really had some, like, I remember me and my friend Jessica, I was like, this is not healthy. This is a problem. But I truly was like, I would like to go chug 3 beers right now. And then we just walked to a bar in the East Village and basically just like talked about how bad things were and drank 3 beers like in 20 minutes. And like,
that sounds great.
Yeah. And it was like moments like that, like, you know, of just like people seeing people, we were all in this situation together. And I think it was that thing of like, everyone is laser focused on the person who's sick and who's dying. And then giving one of the greatest gifts we could give each other is to be like, hey, like, you can take your energy off that for a second and like look at yourself and process for 10 minutes. And I'm here to do that with you. And anytime someone did that, it made things so much better.
That's, yeah, just a sense truly of like, someone walking up to you and be like, hey, just so you know, I see you. Like, I see you, and you are a person, and some things are happening.
Yeah.
You're not, I know you're not the middle of the thing, but you're still part of it. And I see that it's happening to you also is so meaningful.
Totally. Yeah. And it was also just a nice time to learn how different people were processing it. And like, and really having the grace to like because Stacey just had so many friends. Like, there were so many people that loved her, and I got to know, some of them weren't my friends and then became my friends through this whole process, and some of them were already my close friends. But it was like, you know, seeing like, oh, okay, like this person processes it in this way, and like, that's okay too. You know what I mean? Like, some people, it's really, like, some people can't handle the admin of it all. But if I call them and I'm like, hey, I've set it up for you to come visit her at this day, at this time, just get on the train. They were like, oh, okay, perfect. I'm going to do that. Whereas other people, you know what I mean? It's like, and
yeah,
just learning the different ways that people could handle it. And what it was nice to be like, it was a good exercise in how much grace you can give someone during these really hard times, you know?
You mentioned that there were like beautiful memories from during the time when Stacey was sick. Are there any of those that you would share with me?
There was a day where like she really wanted McDonald's, and her doctor had been like there was some concerns about like how healthy she should be eating while she was like on chemo to fight the tumor. And she was like, she texted me and was like, I want you to come here and get me, because she was wheelchair bound at this point. She was like, I want you to come here and get me and tell them you're taking me on a walk and take me to fucking McDonald's. And I grabbed her in her wheelchair and was like, yeah, we're just going to go on a walk around Tompkins Square Park. And then walked her all the way over to the McDonald's on 2nd and 7th. And we had like a fucking feast. And like, and then like revealed that like she ordered a Filet-O-Fish. And I was like, we broke you out to get a Filet-O-Fish? Like, steak. I know. And she was like, don't judge me. It's what I want. And like, we just had like a really nice time in this McDonald's, just the two of us, like talking shit. And like, it was really nice. It was like really nice. And it felt like high school. Like, I felt like I was like sneaking out. I was like, is your mom gonna catch us? Like, we were nervous about getting caught. I'm 27 years old. Like, I was like fully an adult, but we like snuck her out. And it was like, and it felt like, I don't know, it just felt like this moment that was like, you know, nice and wasn't totally textured by like these horrible things that were happening. And that is probably, that's one of my favorite memories from that time, for sure.
That's beautiful. Just the idea of being like, I'm really not feeling well. What I need to lift me up is a Filet-O-Fish sandwich from McDonald's is fantastic.
I know. I could not believe it was a Filet-O-Fish. I really couldn't believe it.
I didn't even know that they still had, I didn't know that that was still an item you could order.
So I've told that story a couple times, which has sort of revealed to me that there is actually like a contingent of people who stand the Filet-O-Fish pretty passionately. And so I think it's like a small but dedicated subsect that is like sort of keeping the Filet-O-Fish alive.
Sure. Yeah. The filet heads are out in force. Hashtag fish, Filet-O-Fish. I don't have the hashtag. I don't know what it is.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So, Jake, how has the... You said it's been the pandemic since she died, basically.
Yeah.
And you had that... memorial or whatever it is you would call it for her in Fort Greene Park.
Yeah.
How has your processing or your relationship to your grief for her changed in these couple of years?
Yeah, I think that like at first it was kind of like it honestly felt in this weird way in the beginning, it felt like the pandemic was an extension of it. It was like Stacey died. And like I said, I was out of the country when she died. And I remember like thinking about that she had died, getting back on the plane to come back to America. And that was like they were doing COVID checks and it was this whole thing. And it like, and then the pandemic happened. And so it sort of felt like this like continuous stream of like, Stacey died and then the pandemic happened. And I was like, the world is just falling the fuck apart, you know?
Yeah.
And it all felt like this one big mass of like everything in the world was changing. And then I think as like I settled into it a little bit, you know, as like we kind of settled into like, got our bearings again, I was like, oh, okay, like I'm here. She's not. That thing happened. And that's separate from like what was just going on for like 4 months with the world and stuff. And I think I got a lot less. I was fucking angry for a long time. I was angry the whole year she was sick. I was more angry than I was sad most of the time. I was so angry. And I was so angry that there was no one to be angry at. Like, I think that was the worst part. I was like, I really wish this was someone's fault. I really fucking wish this was someone's fault. And like, it wasn't. And that was really hard. And I think I needed time for the anger to, and it's that thing I mentioned earlier where I felt like I needed to be, I think I felt like Stacey deserved my anger. I was like, there needs to be justice for what happened to her. And I need to stay angry to honor her. And it's disrespectful to her to stop being angry. It's disrespectful to her to stop being sad. Or even, like, it's disrespectful to her to, like, try to find peace in this. Like, that was, I really felt that way. And so, frankly, a lot of times I would just not think about it. And then it would, like, come up in these, like, kind of, like, roaring heads sort of place ways. And now it's sort of like, it's true, like, melancholy. Like, there's, like, it'll always be really sad. It's not, like, my entire life. It's not every moment of every day. But there are everything I think about. Ooh, I'm maybe going to cry. Anytime I feel thankful for something or grateful for something or in life, I think about her and, like, think about, like, why I should be grateful and like why it almost heightens my gratitude for things and my joy of things. And that is, I like that I think about her in the happiest moments and the most grateful moments. And I tried and like, I've let myself not be angry and like just accepted that like it happened and that fucking sucks. But it's no one's fault, and me being angry doesn't help her, and it doesn't, me not being angry doesn't hurt her, you know? Letting it kind of bleed through in the moments when I feel grateful and thinking of her and being, you know, reminded why I could be, that there's even more reason to be grateful than I can imagine, and also grateful that, like, I knew her. So I guess that's the evolution for me.
I mean, that's really beautiful, Jake. I think that realization that it, I mean, maybe this is not exactly what you're saying, but that it wouldn't, she wouldn't necessarily be like, hey, Jake, and stay mad forever, please. Cause that's, you know, that's.
No, she was the most joyful. I never saw Stacey angry once in my fucking life. Like, she was like, she was like the most joyful, fun loving person ever and would have been like, stop being angry. It's gross. Like, absolutely. Like, it's so incongruous with who she was. But, you know, but so was what happened to her. And I think that's the thing. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
That was like what people would always say is like, it's, why is it Stacey? You know what I mean? As though if it had been like some other dude who was like remotely rude, who'd be like, no, he does deserve a terrible brain tumor. But like, but it was just.
Yeah. Remember when he tried to split the check, even though he ordered more than everybody else? I mean, it's kind of coming back around.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Karma's real, babe. But no, like, but like, no, she would have never wanted it. But I felt like I needed to, because I needed, it's that same fucking thing we talked about earlier of, I needed to make it okay. And now I'm just okay with the fact that that thing will never be okay, but it is, it just has to be.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the realest realness of it all, that it's like, you know, the death is irrefutable and there was nothing that anybody knew how to do that would have made it any different. And you can have any feelings you want to have, but what good, if you have any control over them, which maybe you don't, what good will they do you?
Yeah.
What value will those, does it bring some value to you or in your life and the people you know and or to her for you to try to be angry? Because the answer is probably not.
It's also like, okay, what am I doing? Like being a less good version of myself in her name? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's like, it's not serving anyone and it's like disrespect. It's like, it's worse. It's just worse. It's all around a bad approach, and I can't believe I did it for a period of time.
But it seems very, it makes a lot of sense to me, but to hear you frame it that way, it's very clear that it's like, yeah, in your honor, I choose to be someone worse than I was before.
Yeah, that's truly what it is when you break it down, and so I'm glad I'm not doing that anymore.
This next question has sort of already been answered by that, but are there things you feel like you've learned from grief? Are there things, or maybe this is a better question, anything good come out of this? Obviously, you don't wish that it had happened, right?
Yeah.
But are there things that have been good as a result of this?
I think that I think myself and a lot of people I know, a lot of Stacey's friends, learned from that, like, the importance of community. Like, and like, and checking in on your fellow loved ones and like supporting each other in these like truly hard times. Like there were these moments where things would be so crazy and so bad. And then like, especially really early on when they were like, they didn't know what was going on at first. And it would be like, we have to get her to the hospital, but she can't walk, but she doesn't have a wheelchair and she lives in a 6'4" walk up and she also can't see out of her left eye. Like, there was just these crazy days where it was like, and also it's like an improv team that's helping her. Like, and like, I just remember these moments where like me and I would like look at one of my friends and we would kind of just like make eye contact and be like, I fucking got you. And like, we're going to get through this. And just, I think it really taught a lot of us that like in the hard times, you have to turn to the person next to you and be like, I'm going to need you on this, but I got you on this too. And I guess that's something good that came of it, is I think it did build some like really special bonds. And I think it taught me and a lot of us like to not sweat the little things as much, because life's going to give you the big things. So don't like worry about, like, life's going to give you the big things.
Yeah. There's some big things coming.
So just like fucking chill, dude, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's also a nice tribute to her that she is a way that that all of her friends remain bound together to whatever degree it's because of this experience with her.
Yeah. Yeah. Like for sure. For sure. And I do think that is very nice. Is like those people that all like, you know, especially like the theater we all knew each other from is gone. It closed. And I don't see a lot of those people as much anymore. But there's like a certain collection of them. There's like a certain, you know, handful of folks that like when I see them, like because of what happened with Stacey, like there's a connection that will, I think, last forever because of what happened. And that is, you know, in a way sad, but it's also really special. And I think that would make Stacey happy.
Do you think of Stacey as being somewhere now? Like, do you try to communicate with her, or do you, I don't know, is she a ghost? Do you think she's is there an afterlife, or like, what's your perspective on any of that?
Like I said earlier, I listened to this podcast. I knew you were going to ask that question. And I'm laughing because I didn't even consciously realize this until right now. But like, my answer is normally, I don't care. Mm-hmm. My answer is normally I don't care, because like I don't, someone once told me, and I did not look this up and I did not corroborate it, and I hope it's true, but if it's not, don't tell me, that like at some point in time there was like, scientists found like a genetic marker that some people have that is like linked with a like intense need to know about the afterlife. Like, some people are just like innately need to like have a concrete belief and like be like, this is what's happening after. And some people don't have that. And I really don't have that. I'm like, whatever our guess is, it's probably wrong. Like, I'm just going to try to do my best and see what happens after. You know what I mean? Like, I can't spend too much energy trying to figure it out. And so I feel the same way, where I'm like, I don't think she's not anywhere, but I don't know where she is. And I don't try to think about where she is. But then like half an hour before we started to record this podcast, I was feeling a little emotional and I said out loud to an empty room, I love you, Stacey. So I do guess I thought she was there in that moment. So I guess like there's a contradiction there.
I don't know why that makes me very emotional.
Oh.
I guess because I just relate to that like against all logic. Right? Everything you know. And I thought of, you know, my whole life.
Do you feel that way about your son sometimes?
Yes.
Like, I know you always say, like, you don't think he's there. Like, you don't think he's anywhere.
I do not. I do not think, but again, that's as good a guess as he's, you know, he lives in my microphone. I mean, I have no idea, right?
Yeah.
But I do know that feeling of just out of no place. I don't know why that you're like, you know, hey, Fisher, like, thanks for anything. Thanks, you know. Hey, I just found a parking space. Thank you. I like that. I feel crazy after I do it, but I don't even think about doing it. And then I've done it.
Yeah. But it's like, the thing is, Michael, it's like, I do think what that is like, even people who are alive in your life right now, like your kids, your wife, like they're not in the room right now. If you pan your computer around, everyone's been sitting watching me the whole time.
They're all here.
No, but like they exist in your mind right now as like the emotions you have around them, the memories you have with them, the things you've thought about them. And then like you see them in real life in the physical world and that's like also them. And it's like their existence to you is like the connection of those two things, right? And then like at some point when people leave you, the physical part is gone and all you have is like all those thoughts and feelings. But that's all they ever were to you, kind of. So in that way, like, Fisher is there. And in that way, like, Stacey is there. Because, like, that's all ever, like, all they ever were to you were your thoughts and your feelings and your caring for them. And that didn't go away. And so in a way, when that comes up and, like, those moments where it feels, like, really present in your mind, it is like they're there. And it feels for a second like they were there in the way that you felt when they were physically there. Did that make sense?
That made I don't even know how to describe the level of sense that it made. It felt like more true than truth.
Okay, cool.
What? I mean, like, it's almost like the thing it makes me think of is that idea of object permanence, but it's obviously not an object, but it's just like.
It's like inverse. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, well, Fisher's just like gone behind a tree, but he's still there. He's not, you know what I mean? He's not, yes, he's not.
That's what I'm saying.
You can't see him, but he's still there. Like the emotion of that remains, even if you don't have an eye on him.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know, like if you were making a decision and then like a thought about him comes up, or if I'm trying to think about something and a thought about Stacey comes up and that inflects, that's not the right word. If that affects
my, wrong.
Oof, flat wrong word, hard wrong word.
Podcast canceled.
Scratch everything I said. I'm an idiot. No, but like but if you think about them and then that affects your choice or your actions, like they did make you do it. Like they affected you and they've been dead for how long? But like I don't know. Like it's like you can believe in like people. I don't know. I'm not going to say that like their ghost is here, but like their memories and their residual like emotional imprint on you, on me are there and real and affecting all of it. And so in that way, they're still part of this world, sort of.
Jake, I loved this.
Me
doing
too.
This was so great. I would naturally end the podcast here, but I don't want to, if there's anything else you want to say, I feel like you're like, just like impromptu writing a very good book right now. So if you have any other thoughts on the subject, I don't want to stop you from saying them before I end the podcast.
I mean, I've also loved this. You are the best. Like this, I don't know, your podcast is, it's such a kindness and it's created such a beautiful space for so many people.
Thank you for saying that.
And I don't think I would have realized a lot of these things during this conversation had I not listened to many episodes of it already. But yeah, I think, I would just say like, if you're listening to this and you lost a loved one and it took a long time to lose them once you found out you were going to lose them, or if you're in that process right now, be gracious to yourself and the people around you. Be as gracious to yourself and the people around you as you are being to the person who is dying, because you're all going through something.
I love that. That was Jake Cornell. This is A Good Cry. Thanks for listening, and I hope it helps. Oh, hello, Michael Cruz Kane again. Did you know I have a show in New York City on February 24th? We'll be talking grief and doing some comedy. The show is called Sorry for Your Loss, and it's at Fotografiska, which is like the most beautiful museum in the entire city. It is so cool. I hope you will see me there. You will also see my good friend Chris Gethard, who's going to do a set as well. You may know him from HBO's Career Suicide or his podcast, Beautiful Anonymous. And it's hosted by Rebecca Sofer, who is a founder of ModernLoss.com, as well as an author, as well as a cool human being. So it's all around grief. It's all around comedy. I hope you'll join me. You can find a link to the tickets in the description of this episode. And I hope you will subscribe, rate, review the podcast if you haven't already. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you. You are the best. Individual. You. No, I'm talking to you specifically. You. Not, no, you. It's you. You're the one. Thank you. Bye. A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Bree Mattan.
That was a HeadGum podcast.